The death toll from Israel's relentless aerial and artillery strikes on Gaza is approaching 20,000, mostly women and children. Palestinian resistance fighters fire a barrage of rockets deep into Israel, with reports pointing to sounds of explosions in Tel Aviv and surrounding areas. Yemen warns the newly formed U.S.-led military coalition at the Red Sea of a painful response against any violation of its sovereignty. Hello and welcome to World News. This is a broadcast from our Tehran headquarters. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Now let's begin with the Gaza Strip, where Israel is relentlessly pummeling the besieged territory, killing more defenseless women and children. At least 50 people were killed and a dozen injured in an artillery attack on the Gaza City. Israeli forces also bombed more than 10 buildings in Beit Hanun. Airstrikes on the Jabali refugee camp also claimed at least 13 lives. Air raids targeted Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza, too. Now, elsewhere in the south, the regime launched fresh strikes against Khan Yunus. Nearly 30 people also fell victim to the latest attacks on Rafah. A Palestinian who survived the attack in the southern city has described it as barbaric.
I haven't seen a crime like this before. I'm 73 years old. I've seen wars waged by Israel in 1965 and 67, but I haven't seen something like this before. It's a barbaric act and a heinous crime.
The death toll from the Israeli onslaught since October 7th now tops 19,600, mainly women and children. Hospitals and residential buildings are among the prime targets of the bombings and shelling. The World Health Organization says that Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza is out of function. Israeli forces have laid a siege to the complex. They once again attacked Al Ahli Hospital in Gaza City, too. Now, most of the staff has been abducted by invading troops. The hospital is completely out of service. The situation remains dire in other hospitals, including Al Shifa in Gaza City. A nonprofit human rights organization based in Europe has painted a harrowing picture of the scale of starvation in Gaza as Israel continues with the all-out war on the fully blockaded territory. A report by the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor suggests that more than 70% of people in the Palestinian territory are suffering from severe hunger. The report says many Palestinians are forced to eat expired food items to deal with their starvation. Every person in the besieged territory has access to only 1.5 liters of water per day. That's 15 liters less than the required level for survival. Now, the report came as several other rights groups already warned that Israel is weaponizing starvation by deliberately blocking the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza. Let's now take a listen to a displaced Palestinian talking about the dire situation in Gaza.
We just have light blankets, and I swear we're sleeping on the floor. At night, it rains, and we're close to the sea. The winter is so cold, and the hardest thing is when you have to go to the toilet. There are no services, no water, no sanitation, and the smell of sewage is everywhere. And there is a garbage dump behind the camp. Life is sad, sadder than you can imagine. What can I say? There is no warmth, no warmth at all. When you leave the fire and enter the tent, which is covered with drops of dew and has no blankets or mattresses. The situation is hard and catastrophic.
Now, our correspondent, Moti Abu Musabe, has also reported on the harsh conditions that Palestinians are encountering. He has visited tents sheltering the displaced people at a hospital in Deir al-Bala.
Another phase of the current catastrophe that the displaced Palestinians who are taking shelter in the yards of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Bala city are going through is coping with the heavy rain that has hit the Gaza Strip. It just took less than 10 minutes for the tents, which are made of scraps of plastic or fabric, to be flooded completely with water, and for the land to be turned into swamps, obstructing the movement of people. The rainwater has at least half a meter deep and overwhelmed the people inside the tents. soaking all existing clothes and covers, albeit little.
This is my tent. It is made of plastic and has an area of 4 square meters. My family consists of 13 members. We all sleep inside this tent. After it rained, the tent was engulfed by 0.5 meter of rainwater that soaked our clothes and blankets. Thus, we hug each other to warm the children. We will remain steadfast no matter what happened.
It was just a matter of a few seconds for the people here to realize that they are trapped between the hardship of having access to the basic humanitarian needs and the demolitious rainy weather. Civil defense crews, who are totally overwhelmed with attempts to recover bodies from the rubble of houses destroyed by Israeli strikes, rushed to help the people, despite the lack of needed equipment.
The people here are living in tents which were totally flooded with rainwater because these tents are not designed or prepared to endure this heavy rain. Despite the lack of the needed equipment, we managed to help the people using some primitive means. However, these tents need to be rehabilitated in order to provide protection against the harsh winter.
It's worth mentioning that at least 4,000 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, have been taking shelter at the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital since the Israeli forces launched a ground offensive in the northern part of the Gaza Strip and in Gaza City.
This is another dark side of this continuous suffering for the displaced Palestinians here in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. It is unfolding with the continuous heavy rain. As you can see, that the people here are living inside tents which are not designed or established to protect them from this kind of unprecedented situation. This is a continuation of the distress that the Palestinian people here are experiencing. Muti Abu Musabbih, middle area of Gaza Strip.
Arena, from London, I'm joined by human rights activist Arzu Merali. Good to have you with us. So Arzu, you just heard the reports and you know very well what's happening in the Gaza Strips these days. Let's have your assessment of the situation.
Sadly and shockingly, and I think we all know this, we're looking at an intense humanitarian disaster. And it's unfathomable how this can be happening, being played out on our television screens, on our social media in real time. An outright genocide. This is no longer arguable. I think the phrase that a lot of people are using is textbook genocide. And at the same time, so little international momentum through the established organizations and international governmental and non-governmental organizations, networks, to do anything. It's either a case of total paralysis or obstinate and really, frankly, shocking and immoral support for the Israeli regime. That said, and as distressing as all of this is, we are seeing a worldwide grassroots movement in support of Palestine. And I think, inshallah, we're going to see a big change of the situation in the coming weeks and months.
Hopefully. You just mentioned those movements, Arzu. I just wanted to ask you this question as to which one do you find to be more effective to counter all these Israeli brutalities against Palestinians in Gaza, the protest rallies being held or conferences, seminars being held, or let's say, or some action, retaliatory actually attacks by Yemenis as well and others?
You know, it's a bit of everything. And we've seen that in the past as well, that there was never one, if you want to take the closest analogy that people like to make, which is with apartheid South Africa, it was a combination of all of these things. There was frontline support from rebels in Angola, Cuba sent people, et cetera, et cetera. There was worldwide boycotts, and there was resistance within the country. There were all sorts of direct actions, and there was political mobilization as well, including protests worldwide. We are in a similar situation now. I think what is different here, both is the magnitude of the suffering, and this is something I've heard for decades now from activists, very senior people involved in overthrowing apartheid in South Africa, who've always said, you know what, I've been to Palestine and the situation, I'm talking about people who went there 20, 25, 30 years ago, the situation is much worse than anything we ever had in South Africa. Mm-hmm. We've had a really huge effort to crush pro-Palestinian activism worldwide. Forget about all the attempts. We're going to see quite possibly an attempt to block the Yemeni resistance in the maritime resistance that's going on. But the tables have turned now. The fact that there is that maritime resistance coming from a very unexpected quarter to many people who have been caught off guard, at least in the West, is probably no surprise to anybody in West Asia, but there's still a huge imperial arrogance in the West about Yemen as a country with agency, or at least the people in the Ansar Allah movement having agency. As well as the kind of protest, the fact that people, politicians, leading civil society figures, writers, artists, etc., are taking a stand despite, you know, the kind of personal cost to their careers, which has always held them back, are doing so now, and are doing so in places, for example, like Germany, which has become a totally obvious police state when it comes to the issue of Palestine, and is clamping down very heavily on pro-Palestinian support. We are seeing major backlashes in all of those arenas.
Okay, I appreciate that. Arzu Mir Ali, human rights activist out of London. Now moving on, Palestinian resistance fighters are stepping up retaliatory operations against Israeli forces inside and outside the Gaza Strip. Military wing of the Hamas movement says a barrage of rockets was fired deep into Israel. According to Israeli media, sounds of explosions were heard in Tel Aviv and the area surrounding it. No immediate report of casualties. The Al-Qassam brigades also hit Israeli armored vehicles inside Gaza. The military wing of the Islamic Jihad movement also says it targeted regime forces east of Khan Yunus with rockets and mortars. Israeli helicopters were seen transporting the wounded. Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement warns that a newly formed U.S.-led coalition in the Red Sea will get a painful response if it violates the sovereignty of the Arab nation. Mohammed Al-Bukhati, a senior Ansarullah official, issued that warning. And that after U.S. Secretary of Defense announced his country and a host of other states are creating a new force to protect vessels transiting the Red Sea. Al-Bukhati said, however, that Yemen's armed forces only target Israeli-linked ships in response to the regime's deadly aggression on Gaza. He stressed Yemen's stance and said that the country won't allow vessels heading for Israeli ports unless they carry medicines and food for the people of Gaza. Al-Bukhati added that the U.S. is trying to frighten other countries to protect Israel's interests in the Red Sea.
This is a firm response to Israel's genocide and aggression against Palestinians. It has been about 2.5 months since Israel launched its deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. Muslim countries missed no chance to deplore the Israeli crimes verbally, but there were few, including Yemen, that firmly stood in solidarity with defenseless Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. After carrying out drone and missile strikes on Israeli targets, Yemen's armed forces have now been targeting Israel-bound vessels in waters around their country. The army has time and again stated it would stop its operations if Israel stops its aggression and ends its blockade on Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces have also refuted claims about targeting ships moving toward other destinations. All vessels except Israel-bound ones can safely sail through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. As usual, Israel's main backer, the U.S., has been trying to reverse the impact of the Yemeni operations by announcing the formation of a maritime coalition under the pretext that it would protect the transit in the Red Sea. But Washington's main goal is to protect Israel's interest. However, Yemen's Ansarullah has issued strong warning to the U.S. Mohammed Al-Bukhati, a senior Ansarullah official, says the newly formed coalition will get a painful response if it violates the sovereignty of the Arab country. But how significant the Yemeni operations in the Red Sea are? In recent weeks, Yemeni naval forces have targeted several vessels sailing through the Red Sea toward Israel. Their primary goal has been to exert economic pressure on Tel Aviv, and they have been rather successful. Several major companies have suspended their shipments to and from Israel in the wake of Yemen's operations in the Red Sea. This has dealt a heavy blow to Israel's economy, with the latest reports indicating that the port of Eilat is hardly hit as the result of this disruption.
The non-arrival of ships to Eilat means that there is no income for the port, while the fixed expenses for its maintenance and operation remain the same, and we have a substantial negative flow.
The almost complete halt to the arrival of ships to Eilat has led to an 80% fall in the port's profits. This is while reports say that Egypt's Suez Canal has seen no harm to its maritime activities during Yemen's operations against Israel-bound ships. The Red Sea is a strategic trade route connecting Asia to Europe through the Suez Canal. About 12% of global trade passes through the Red Sea, including 30% of global container traffic. The disruptions in this area have had a direct impact on global economy. Now, cargo ships traveling from Asia to Europe have to sail around the African continent. This has increased the transit time and led to higher freight rates and delays. Also, shipping insurance costs have jumped by tens of thousands of dollars a day, and oil prices have gone up as well. To sum up, the international community has been unable to stop the Israeli crimes against Palestinians through political means. However, it seems Yemenis have employed a successful tactic to pressurize Israel.
The U.S. Secretary of Defense says Washington will continue what it calls ironclad support for the Tel Aviv regime in its onslaught on the Gaza Strip.
This is Israel's operation, and I'm not here to dictate timelines or terms. Our support to Israel's right to defend itself is ironclad, as you've heard me say a number of times, and that's not going to change.
Now, Lloyd Austin made those comments in a press conference with Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, Yoav Gallant. Austin vowed to keep providing the Israeli army with military equipment. Washington has already provided the regime with billions of dollars in military aid. Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance movement reacted to the comments. It said that the U.S. is encouraging Israel to continue its crimes in Gaza. The movement says that U.S. Defense Secretary's justification that Israel is waging a self-defense war confirms that Washington is actually managing the regime's military. All right, with that, we come to the end of this newscast from Tehran. Thank you.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. The Israeli regime is facing mounting international pressure over the rising civilian death toll and destruction of hospitals in Gaza as it presses on with its war against the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The World Health Organization, WHO, has sounded the alarm about Israel's destruction of a hospital in the northern Gaza Strip, amid reports that the regime's forces buried Palestinians alive at the facility's courtyard during an operation. The World Health Organization's Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus made the comment in a Sunday post on X social media platform concerning an Israeli operation targeting the Kamal Adwan Hospital in the city of Beit Lahia in northern Gaza. WHO's Director General Ghebreyesus said the Israeli military's attack on the facility had rendered it non-functional and resulted in the killing of at least 8 patients and detention of many healthcare workers. Ghebreyesus added, "We learned that many patients had to self-evacuate at great risk to their health and safety, with ambulances unable to reach the facility." The WHO's head noted, "Of the deceased patients, several died due to lack of adequate healthcare, including a 9-year-old child." He also expressed extreme concern about the well-being of the internationally displaced people who were sheltering in the hospital building at the time of the Israeli military attack. Gaza's healthcare system was already on its knees, and the loss of another, even minimally functioning hospital is a severe blow, Ghebreyesus warned. He added, "Attacks on hospitals, healthcare personnel and patients must end right now." On Saturday, 16th of December, Qatar's Al Jazeera television network reported the Israeli bulldozers had demolished tents of displaced Palestinians outside the hospital, burying people alive inside the tents. Video footage provided by Al Jazeera showed mangled tents and belongings of Palestinians at the hospital's courtyard. The report said at least 20 bodies had been found lying in the yard following the Israeli operation. The operation came amid the Israeli regime's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, which started on 7th of October, following an operation by Gaza's resistance movement dubbed Operation Al-Aqsa Storm. Around 19,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children, have been killed in the Israeli strikes so far in Gaza. The Palestinian health minister has called for an international investigation into reports that the Israeli military have buried Palestinians alive in the courtyard of Kamal Adwan Hospital. The Palestinian health minister, Mai Al-Kaila, said on Saturday, 16th of December, information and testimonies collected from eyewitnesses, medical teams and media crews indicate the Israeli forces buried Palestinians alive in the hospital's courtyard. The Geneva-based Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor has also called for an international investigation into the horrific act. Meanwhile, a senior Hamas official has reaffirmed that the movement will not enter into talks over a new prisoner swap deal with the Israeli regime until the regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza comes to an end. Khalil al-Haya, a member of Hamas's political bureau, made the remark in an interview with Al Jazeera on Sunday, 17th of December. Al-Haya said the resistance rejects the aggression of the enemy, which must be stopped before we can discuss prisoner exchange. The issue of prisoner exchange is closed until the cessation of the war, Al-Haya asserted. He added, "We want an end to the aggression, then we will start reconstruction and construction of Gaza, and after that we will talk about the prisoners." Also, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, says Israel continues its fruitless war of crimes in Gaza, but the Palestinian people will definitely emerge victorious. Hossein Amir Abdullahian, the Iranian foreign minister, added, "Despite the continuation of war crimes against women and children, Palestine is now the definite winner of this unequal battle." Amir Abdullahian posted his comments on the X platform on Sunday, 17th of December. The Iranian foreign minister emphasized that Israel's onslaught on Gaza since 7th of October has failed to destroy and disarm the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The war could not lead to the release of Zionist military prisoners, while the forced displacement of the people of Gaza also failed to yield any success, Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian stressed. The French broadcaster France 24, France 24, has also covered the same story. The United Nations Security Council voted on Monday, 18th of December, on a new resolution calling for an urgent and sustainable cessation of hostilities in the Gaza Strip. The health ministry in the Hamas-run territory says more than 18,800 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have died in Israel's campaign in Gaza. It said dozens were killed in Israeli airstrikes and ground operations on Sunday, 17th of December. Following months of fierce bombardment and fighting, most of Gaza's population have also been displaced and people are grappling with shortages of fuel, food, water and medicine. Fewer than one-third of Gaza's hospitals are partly functioning, according to the United Nations, with the World Health Organization, WHO, denouncing on Sunday, 17th of December, the impact of Israeli operations on two hospitals in northern Gaza. The World Health Organization's chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said the agency was appalled by the effective destruction of the Kamal Adwan Hospital, where Israeli forces carried out a multi-day operation against Hamas. Outside the hospital courtyard, which showed tank and bulldozer tracks, Abu Muhammad, who came to look for his son, stood crying. Abu Muhammad said, "I don't know how I will find my son," pointing to the debris. The Israeli army pulled out of the hospital on Sunday, 17th of December, after an operation lasting several days, claiming it had been used as a command and control center by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The Israeli regime said before entering the hospital, it had negotiated safe passage for the evacuation of most of the people inside the hospital. The World Health Organization, meanwhile, also said Israeli bombing had reduced the emergency department of Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza, turning it into a bloodbath. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza said an Israeli strike on Sunday hit Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza Strip in the city of Khan Yunis, killing one person and injuring seven others. And the Palestinian health ministry said Israeli military had stormed Al-Oda Hospital in northern Gaza Strip on Sunday and detained medical staff following several days of siege and bombing of hospital. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu again vowed to fight until the end on Sunday, 17th of December, promising to eliminate Hamas. The English website of Al Arabiya News has also covered the same story. The head of the World Health Organization on Sunday denounced the effective destruction of Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza Strip, adding that at least eight patients had died. Among the deceased patients was a nine-year-old child, according to Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the head of the World Health Organization, WHO. In a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, Ghebreyesus made a statement saying the Israeli army pulled out of the hospital after an operation lasting several days, claiming it had been used as a command and control center by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Hamas has repeatedly denied all such Israeli claims. Ghebreyesus said the World Health Organization is appalled by the effective destruction of Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza over the last several days, rendering it non-functional and resulting in the death of at least eight patients. Many healthcare workers were reportedly detained, and the World Health Organization and partners are urgently seeking information about their status. Israel's representative to the United Nations posted to X accusing Ghebreyesus, the head of the World Health Organization, of making no mention of Hamas's presence in the hospital.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tonight, however, in this discussion, we continue in the theme that we began with about how to live this pure Islamic life. You'll recall that we took inspiration from the verse of the Quran where Allah addressed the believers and He said, O you who believe, He said, Istajibu lillahi wa li rasuli idha da'akum lima yuhyikum. Answer the call of God and His Prophet when they call you to that which gives you life. And we mentioned in that first night that the life that we are being called to, this life that we are being invited to go towards, that we have been speaking about for the last 9 nights, is not the physical life, because we all, alhamdulillah, have the physical life. We are all breathing, walking, talking, we live. But rather this life that we are invited to partake in through accepting the message of God in the Quran, through following the sunnah, the example of our beloved Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam, and through also following the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, is a life which is vastly different than just physically living. And it becomes a life which we live in this world, which allows us to go through the challenges of life. It allows us to make the best life in the world to come. And so we were discussing last night about creating the functional families, as you'll recall. We looked at it from at least two viewpoints. The one aspect, obviously, of creating a functional family, as we have been discussing in these last nights, is the building up of the individual, the building up of the individual blocks, the young man and young woman. We talked about the fact that eventually, that the goal, we can say, is for that man and woman to come together in marriage in the sight of Allah, to create the initial family. And then if Allah wills, we looked at the verse of the Quran where if Allah wills, He gives that couple children, either boys, girls, a mixture, or sometimes we, as the Quran said, that sometimes Allah allows the couple to be childless. From there, we looked at the fact that, you know, when those children come, that we obviously have a responsibility as parents. Tonight, in this final discussion, we look not at an action, but more so at an emotion, or the concept of emotions. And more specifically, that of either forgiveness and pardon, or exacting revenge. You know, when you look at it at one level, we want to try and look at it from the level of our own lives. You know, when we live in a society where we live in a family with our spouse, our children, our extended family, always there are disagreements, arguments that families get into. And is the solution to be aggressive? Is it to show the emotions of hatred and aggression against family? Or is it to forgive and forget? And if we transplant that, or we take it a step higher, we also are asking that same question tonight. We might get to the answer, we might not, but you know, the very first thing that we have to ask ourselves is that these emotions that we have, whether, you know, not only in relation to Karbala, but about life in general, is that why did Allah create human beings with this complex process of having emotions? You know, you think about it, many times emotions, they seem to be something which just don't make sense. For example, a man and a woman fall in love with each other. This emotion of love is created between these two people. But what does love mean when we say that I'm in love with a person? What does that emotion of love actually mean? Now we know that there's something going on in the brain. Certain neurons are being fired up. Certain chemicals are being released in the brain that makes us feel certain emotions. Love or hate or anger or happiness. So we know that there is something behind them. There is not only a a process happening in the mind, but these same emotions that we get, they also obviously travel through the body, and we actually begin to feel certain things within the human body. It's difficult to describe, but I'm sure we felt it when we feel emotions. And we see that not only does it affect our mind, but many times it affects the human being at a physical level. So experts of the human mind, they tell us that, you know, these emotions we have, one of the reasons why we have emotions is for us to guide or become a response to situations that we find ourselves in. Some people say, well, you know, there are many emotions which have a detrimental impact on the human being. Why did God create them within us? You know, people have anxiety, for example, or people have fear. What is the benefit of these emotions? Why aren't we just always in a good mood? Why do we have to have these emotional swings and things happen in our lives and our brain and our body somehow react to them? You know, at one level, we can see that emotions allow us to make a change in our surroundings. They actually help us and benefit us in many ways. And if you think about your days at school when you are on the night of an exam, you have a test the next day, you feel anxiety, you feel stressed out, you have that anxious feeling in you. But that feeling then translates into you wanting to study, to cram, to do whatever you can to get a good mark. So if we didn't have the emotion of anxiety or stress, right, people probably wouldn't go through and fulfill obligations they had. They wouldn't study because they would just feel melancholy. They'd be just very chill at everything that's going on. Anger is another emotion that people feel. And anger can be channeled in a right or a wrong way. We see many times that people have road rage. People get angry at home. They become violent, right? They have taken anger, which is an emotion that God has created, which has a benefit, but they haven't been able to channel that anger in the right way. So yes, anger has a negative aspect to it, but if you're hiking in the mountains and you come across a wild animal, your sense of fear or anger will kick in and you will try and defend yourself. You'll either have that ability or you'll have that thought to either fight or flight, right? You'll either want to stand and defend yourself if you're in front of an aggressor because the anger will build up in you, or you will try and run away and get out of the situation. So it's not healthy to suppress emotions. It's not healthy to say, well, I have these emotions God has created and I'm just going to suppress them. I'm going to just try and be very calm and collected all the time and not let the situation get the best of me. No, that getting the best of you, as long as the emotion is channeled in a way that Allah expects, that's very good. It's something that we're actually required to do. But when we let our emotions overtake us, when we let our emotions take over our religious obligations, that is where problems begin in our lives. And so scholars tell us that, you know, we need to understand emotions. And unfortunately, this is not something that madrasa will teach. This is maybe not something that a school curriculum may or may not teach. We have to understand that as human beings, we have these emotions. We have to recognize as individuals, not that the school can teach us, but we have to recognize what is triggered or what we get triggered by. So that way, if we are getting angry at our family or our siblings or the spouses are warring with one another, they can recognize what is the trigger point and they can talk to the spouse and they can basically recognize where these arguments and disputes come in the family and be able to resolve them before the difficulties and the arguments get further and further.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Hali Hakimun Mateen. قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The number of UK companies going bust jumped by almost a fifth in October compared with a year earlier, as the toll of high interest rates and falling sales hit struggling businesses in Britain. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to one of UK's biggest insolvency practitioners, higher interest rates are pushing an increasing number of companies into insolvency. Begbie's trainer said it expected to see more businesses tip into insolvency in tandem with the indicators of corporate financial stress in the United Kingdom. The Bank of England has raised interest rates from 0.1% at the end of 2021 to 5.25% to try to tame inflation. That has significantly increased the cost of borrowing for British businesses, preventing many from papering over the cracks with cheap debt. Interest rate increases also have the effect of reducing spending in the economy, giving indebted companies little way out. Rick Trainer, the executive chair of Begbie's Trainer, said the company had seen an increase in insolvency numbers reflecting the current interest rate and inflation environment. The company's revenues from insolvencies rose by 17%, and it said that corporate distress levels continue to increase. Economists expect Britain's recent weak economic performance to continue into 2024. Forecasts from professional economists compiled by the Treasury suggest Britain's gross domestic product will grow by only 0.5% in 2024, the same rate as in 2023. Although suggesting the United Kingdom will avoid a recession, the level of economic growth would remain far short of the 2% annual average before the financial crisis of 2008. According to data from the Insolvency Service, the number of corporate insolvencies in the year to September 30th increased by 17% to 24,326. Begbie's Trainer said that increase had largely been from liquidations, which tend to be requested by smaller companies, but added that administrations were also approaching pre-pandemic levels after a period in which companies were given more leeway on some debts. Administrators tend to be called in to larger, more complex businesses. Insolvency practitioners have a real-time insight into the pressures facing businesses, although they, by contrast, tend to benefit from an increase in work when times are tough for the wider economy. Begbie's Trainer said It has increased staff numbers by 12% over the past year to cope with the expected influx of new business. The company reported a resilient performance in its financial advisory business as more companies sought to refinance or restructure their businesses. That made up for a decline in revenues from investments or mergers and acquisitions, with fewer businesses feeling able to spend. The website Reddit has also covered the same story. The number of UK companies going bust jumped by almost a fifth in October compared with a year earlier, as the toll of high interest rates and falling sales hit struggling businesses in Britain. The Insolvency Service said 2,308 firms in England and Wales collapsed in October, which was 19% more than in October of 2022. And higher than pre-pandemic levels. Construction companies, retailers and manufacturing firms headed the list of sectors most affected by firms becoming insolvent. The retailer Wilko, which went into administration on 10th of October and has subsequently collapsed with a loss of 12,500 jobs and 400 stores, is expected to signal further company insolvencies in the remainder of the year. The industry body, R3, said corporate insolvencies increased by 71% from October of 2021's total of 1,347 and by 69% compared with pre-pandemic levels in October of 2019. The Insolvency Service said one of the biggest drivers was action by the tax authority HMRC, which has increased the number of winding up orders for unpaid tax in recent months. A breakdown of the figures showed the increase was mostly due to a rise in creditors' voluntary liquidations, in which a company is voluntarily wound up either by its directors or its shareholders. There were 1,880 creditors' voluntary liquidations last month, 13% higher than in October of 2022. The number of administrations which allow an insolvency practitioner to take over the running of a firm, usually to find a potential buyer, was also higher than in October of 2022. The HMRC and other creditors secured winding up orders for 221 compulsory liquidations in October, 45% higher than in October of last year. Insolvency practitioners said Britain had avoided the avalanche of companies going bust predicted in the months after the COVID-19 pandemic first hit in 2020, but was now seeing the effects of tighter and more costly lending on the finances of firms left vulnerable by the cost of living crisis. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a think tank, about 7,000 businesses are likely to fail every quarter in 2024 as high interest rates cause financial strain and Britain's economy enters recession. The Centre for Economics and Business Research said debt taken on during the pandemic, higher borrowing costs and the cost of living crisis would drive an increasing number of businesses under, particularly in the retail and hospitality sectors. There were more than 6,700 business insolvencies in Britain in the second quarter of 2023, more than double in a typical quarter during the pandemic, when many businesses were largely protected from insolvency through a range of support measures. CEBR said insolvencies over the period were 50% higher than the same quarter pre-pandemic in 2019, and they averaged 4,100 on a quarterly basis between 2015 and 2019. The Bank of England has raised interest rates 14 times since the end of 2021, from 0.1% at the end of 2021 to the current 5.25%, heaping pressure on indebted households and businesses. The CEBR is forecasting two more rate increases in the current cycle, with bank rate peaking at 5.75%. The think tank said the worst is yet to come in terms of borrowing costs, quite apart from the impact of fixed-term loans made when interest rates were lower being rolled over at the new higher rates. It added, looking ahead to the future, the CEBR expects the rate of business insolvencies to remain high as interest rates continue to rise, pushing up debt repayments to unsustainable levels for some businesses. Our models suggest that there could be 7,000 insolvencies per quarter on average across 2024. Furthermore, CEBR is forecasting a recession in Britain, with two consecutive quarters of contraction in gross domestic product in the fourth quarter of 2023 and the first quarter of 2024. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khamenei, in a meeting with Iran's sports champions and medalists of the 2023 Asian Games and the Asian Paragames. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyeh on November 22, 2023. I would like to thank each of the athletes who took a stand in one way or another in support of Palestine, declared their stance before the world, not in hiding, gifted their medals to the children of Gaza and the martyrs who were killed in a hospital, where the Zionist regime created a catastrophe. I would also like to thank the athletes who refused to compete with the athletes of the Zionist regime. The correctness of what they did has become clear today. The truth behind this is more apparent than ever today. These are things I am grateful for. This show of gratitude is not just a verbal thank you. It is not merely for a good action. Although whenever someone does something good, they should be thanked for it. But it is because these acts, some of which I have mentioned, have introduced and revealed an outstanding, rational, confident image of the Iranian nation before hundreds of millions of sports spectators.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
These acts, these beautiful movements, are part of Iran's national power. Everyone plays sports. All nations have athletes, players, wrestlers, soccer players, and volleyball players, and they make their country proud too. But what you have done stands out in the world, and it is superior to the issue of athletics and sports honors. These are human honors. So that was my word of appreciation to you for the great, magnificent, meaningful acts that you did. Furthermore, your efforts and your success bring joy to the hearts of our nation. When you win a medal, colorful medals, our nation rejoices and feels proud. It is very important for me that you make people feel happy and proud. I thank you for that as well. So the first thing I wanted to tell you, our dear athletes, was that I am thankful to you because of all the things that I have described. Secondly, I would like to say a few words to the officials. Of course, we have a lot to say to international sports officials. There are many things that we can criticize them about. These problems should be dealt with justly one day. Today, the colonialist, exploitative, arrogant powers stand behind almost all international centers and prevent a fair review. But one day, God willing, these matters will be assessed justly.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.